I think I got a copy of the handout to everybody. Dan does have copies. If you raise your hand, he can get them to you. So changing a few things up, I'm not doing a sermon from Luke, although Luke might show up more than once in the sermon, but it's not a Jesus sermon. It's not a walking through the life of Jesus sermon. The temperature dropped, so it's no longer summer, and I'm not allowed to. No, that's not the truth. I love doing the sermons of the stories of Jesus through the summer. It's just the habit I get into, and then I move on to something different. And if you didn't get a handout, then you don't understand the stress of everybody else in the building. Everyone's getting my handout and going, it looks different, and everyone's just losing their minds. This is not a Dan Bunting sermon. I got this lesson idea from my wife, who read something somewhere, and I have the note. I have this lesson borrowed from Jay Moore. I have no clue who that is. I tried to look him up on the Google, and I got all sorts of Jay Moores, and it wasn't this guy. But it must have been an article or not. Maybe he wrote a book. But it has essentially 8 ideas of what servants or what service looks like. And it's just a really easily understood and practical set of ideas. In Mark chapter 10, verse 44, whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. All right, we're done, right? I mean, like, there are so many statements like that that fulfill all the ideas of what service as a Christian needs to be. What I liked about whatever it was that he did, an article or a book or whatever, what I liked about this Jay Moore's ideas is that he focused on this ability to spell it out and put some clarity to some of these ideas. Everything on this list was something that as I would read through, I go, well, of course, but I wouldn't know to put that into so many words, or I might not have thought of the importance of some of these ideas. I think that if you're a good Christian, you're basically going to be doing these kinds of things, but I don't think that all of these aspects are things that we will do naturally, or not all of them naturally. Our own nature, our own selfishness, our own world nature is going to be combating with some of these ideas, and so I think that it's useful. That means it's a 12-slide lesson, which I did not want to make it on 2 sheets of paper and staple it together, so that's why it's upside up and down. And I didn't take the time to get fun pictures, so I don't know if that makes the adults sad or the kids sad, but there's no pictures. But essentially, it's just a list of 8 ideas, and the reason I don't like this sermon is I have to move fast because it's 8 points. It's not 3 points. It's an 8-point sermon. And so I'm going to be referencing parables and stories, which means I'm not going to be reading as much Bible as I want. I've got scriptures all over the place, but we're going to mostly be remembering Bible stories. I'm going to read one at the beginning, and I'm going to read one at the end. And so one thing that you can do is think of your own. Well, what's another Bible story that illustrates this in a good way or a negative way? So I won't be reading as much of the verses as I like to do, but I'm going to try to make reference to a lot in this. If we are going to be a servant, we cannot choose to serve and be worried about our own rights. And the reason is because service is not about me. Service is not at all about you. It's about the other person. And so if I'm going to serve, my rights or my ideals aren't a part of this. And if it's going to be good service, it's actually got to be practical. It has to be something that somebody needs. It's not some sort of vague idea. We're serving needs, not serving ourselves. The decision to serve can't rely on someone else serving me back, on getting something in return. That's not what service is. That's what the service industry is about, and you give money and you get the thing, or but that's not what service is about, because service is not about you, it's about the other person. The decision to serve doesn't wait on others to begin. I serve because need exists. I don't serve because brother or sister so-and-so started. The service happens because the need is there. The servant will choose to serve alone if necessary, because it's not about others. It's about the person that we are trying to serve. The decision to serve cannot expect a favorable response. This is different from wanting to get something in return. Just because I'm serving doesn't mean that everyone is going to recognize me as Superman with the flowing cape. I am serving, and I might not get the response that I expect or would like out of somebody. I can't save service for the people that I like. I can't only serve attractive people. I have to also serve ugly people. And so if you're getting service from me, it doesn't necessarily mean I think you're pretty. It might mean I think you're ugly and you need the service anyways. It's going to be all the people is what we need to do. The decision to serve means that you're going to look like a servant and that you're going to be treated like a servant. That's not nice. But if you're going to serve, you're going to be a servant, you're going to look and smell like a servant, and you're going to be treated like a servant. One of the things I think is important to think about with all of this, some of you are like, well, of course, but then we get in the way of all these ideas. This is a separate idea, but have you ever heard somebody talk about if you're down in the dumps, or if you're feeling depressed, or if you're feeling alone, a really good remedy to that is serving other people. I have needs. No one's helping me. What am I going to do? I'm going to serve somebody else. When you do that, you are filled. It's weird. It's one of those things where God made human beings where the harder we work our muscles, the stronger they get, whereas the harder you bend metal, the weaker it gets, right? And so when we are down and we are low, and if we decide, nope, I'm going to move past that, I'm going to serve somebody else, it fills us up in return. And that's the way these sorts of things work. And we're going to get something out of it. We're going to get some joy. But if I'm just doing things so that I get the pat on the back, then service is broken. Because again, service is about others. God blesses us, but service is all about others. And now we're just going to start looking through these ideas. I'm going to try to go quickly and not get bogged down. That's this preacher's special skill, is to slow down and get boring all the time. But I'm going to try to keep it moving. But let's read this story. Matthew chapter 20, 1 through 16. Actually, this is not a story about service, right? This is actually a story about work, okay? So people are getting paid, and there's a contract about it. It's a verbal contract, but there's a contract. So it's not perfect for service, but the attitudes that come out are really clear. In this parable, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 20, starting in verse 1, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a master of a house who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into the vineyard. And going about in the third hour, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And to them, he said, 'You go into the vineyard too, and whatever is right, I will give you.' So they went. Going out again in the sixth hour and the ninth hour, he did the same. And about the 11th hour, he came out and found others standing. And he said, 'Why do you stand here idle all day?' And they said, 'Because no one had hired us.' He said to them, 'You go into the vineyard too.' And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, 'Call the laborers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last and going up to the first.' And when those who were hired about the 11th hour came, each of them received a denarius. Now, when those who were hired first came, they thought that they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius. And on receiving it, they grumbled at the master of the house, saying, 'The last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the heat and the burden of the day and the scorching heat.' But he replied to one of them, 'Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last worker as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose and with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge my generosity?' So the last will be first and the first last." I love this story. And in particular, I love that second line in verse 15, "Do you begrudge my generosity?" When I'm going to do the God-given command of serving another person, if I enter into that obedient behavior, thinking about my rights and who and what I am and what I have coming to me, I have just begrudged the generosity of our Lord and Savior. I dishonor God by speaking about my rights. It's an attack on what God has given me, trying to remind him about what he owes me when I am trying to go out and copy his behavior in serving somebody else. We dishonor God's majesty and glory when we complain about things like that. We bring shame on ourselves trying to talk about our rights. If you want to be great, if you want to look like someone who deserves rights, not that we deserve the rights, but if you want to be great, get out there and serve. Luke 22, 25. Let the greatest among you become as the youngest and the leader as the one who serves. That's what greatness is. Our hearts and souls should be moving towards more service, not on building up or defending ourselves. And so when we are walking around saying, well, I might be serving you right now, but let me get this clear with you. That's the wrong way of thinking. When we come into this saying, okay, I'll do this job for this guy, but is he going to expect me to do this again? We might need to set up boundaries. Sometimes there's people that try to take advantage of others. But I tell you what, Jesus tells us to serve. I know of a young lady who is engaged to be married, and she's a good girl. She went to a church, and he went to that church as well. You know, out in the world of church, but, you know, good people, moral people, thinking about these sorts of things. And he was watching a ball game, and she was sitting in the living room, bored, because he was watching a ball game. But they're together, you know, they're in love, and everything's wonderful. And he wanted, I think a glass of water. She goes out, she's getting a glass of water. She's filling it up, and she thought, is he going to expect me to do this when we are married? She was really nervous about whether or not she should give him that glass of water. You know, the joke line is, make me a sandwich. And there is all sorts of rudeness and demands that husbands can make of their wives. And so she was gladly getting him a drink because that's what you do when you are friendly or you're in love and just doing these sorts of normal things. And she thought, what about when we're married? I love that story because my answer is, well, what about it? You're going to want to do that more, right? But she was thinking about her place or her role or what she's supposed to have in her life, and it was breaking that all apart. We're afraid of being called a doormat. We're afraid of being pathetic in the eyes of another. That's subjective. What somebody might call a doormat behavior, others might lift up as very honorable behavior. So we need to be very careful about this. Because if we want to follow Christ, we deny ourselves. And if someone needs a glass of water, I give them a glass of water, not afraid of how many glasses it's going to take. And if they're a camel and they're going to drink more than I could ever imagine, we serve. That's what it's about. Because being blessed people, we don't think about rights. Instead, since we are blessed people, we are people who bless others. We share blessings. We've received blessings, so we share blessings. We don't get stressed out about the quantities. We don't worry about those rights. And then when we're going to get up and we're going to serve somebody, we have to be effective servants. We have to serve the need. This is one of my favorite. I mean, we just talked about a girl who was afraid of maybe over-serving and getting under the thumb of some guy. This is my favorite story of the dumbest husband of all time. But Hannah, why are you so sad that you don't have a son? Aren't I more to you than 10 sons? What an idiot. The dumbest line in the whole Bible. He is a swell guy, and he thinks that by being a decent, swell guy, it's going to overcome all of the things. That's not service. I don't think he meant for it to be this way, but it hurt her. If I was a lady, I'd be hurt. Hurts me just thinking about it. And so it's not that it's ugly on purpose. His service was useless, and the result of that was that it became hurtful. One of the most hurtful lines in the whole Bible is James 2, 15 and 16, when the person says, be warmed and filled, period, right? Be warmed and filled, and then nothing happens. That's not service. That's actually harm. Alleviating our own conscience and refusing to serve somebody else, right? Service needs to be practical. So my service must be more than the things that I like, my special gifts, my special talents. Now, we're talking about gifts and talents in the 1 Corinthians class, and that's a thing, but now I'm going to start complaining about the way people talk about it. My special gift, my special ministry, the thing that I do is pizza. Well, you can't serve a gluten-free, dairy-free family. There's nothing you can do for them. Your special gift is useless. That doesn't mean that you are of no service. You got to get off of your self-centered hobby and do something that somebody actually needs. Well, my special gift is, I don't care what your special gift is. Service isn't about your special gift. But if somebody is needing pizza or needing something that is special to you, then that's excellent, because you like to do it and you're going to do a better job than others possibly, and so it's going to be a great moment. But sick moms need the vacuum run and the toilet cleaned and the laundry washed and folded. They don't need pizza. They can, I mean, it's not hard to get pizza delivered anymore. And so we need to look not only to our own interests, our own services that we like, the things that we like to do. Service is not about me. Service is about the need that the other person has. And it's easy to get caught up in the way I like to do it. The decision to serve cannot rely on someone serving you in return. In Luke 14:14, there is the discussion about who are you going to choose to invite over? Who are you going to choose to serve? Who are you going to meet the needs of? You will be blessed because they can't repay you. When you serve the people who cannot serve you back, when you give to the person who cannot give you back, God pays you back. God gives back to you. You are getting rid of something, you are giving up of yourself, and there is no way of getting it back here on earth from that person. And God is the one who fulfills that for you. It might not be, I mean, sometimes you give something here and you get something from some other avenue, some other person, and like, oh wow, it's almost like that was a perfect circle that God set up. But you might not get anything until the resurrection of the just. That's okay, because you're a part of the resurrection of the just. Once I was at a dinner after services at a restaurant, and Heather and I remembered that we had owed somebody $20. Passed it on because it just popped in our head. Passed it. I can't remember what direction of the table it was, but that person remembered that they owed $20 to some. The $20 bill went around the table. That's just cute and fun. I don't know if it got all the way back to us, but like we paid. I can't remember who all got paid back. Like it just went all the way around the table, and it was cute and it's funny and it's a great story. And if that's what we're doing with our buddies and friends, then we're not serving people, right? That's Pharisees looking out for each other and doing their little thing. And, you know, if you loan $20 and you get, that's okay. There's nothing sinful in that. But passing a $20 bill around the table among a bunch of people who have 20s to spare isn't necessarily service. It's getting down and helping other people. Service isn't connected to reciprocity. Service is connected to love, because love inspires love. Love doesn't inspire repayment. Love inspires love. And we serve, which is love, and that's going to inspire more love. It's not trying to get more back for us. In Mark chapter 10, 37 and 38, two of the guys are asking Jesus, grant us to sit one at your right hand, one at your left in your glory. And Jesus says, are you able to drink the cup that I drink? They're wanting stuff from Jesus. He says, guess what you just need to do? Stop worrying about getting a great place to sit and get busy working at it. We need to not think about, well, I'll have that guy over because he's fun to talk to. I mean, by all means, if you think I'm fun, invite me over for dinner. But that won't necessarily be serving somebody. You might be serving me a meal, but that's not necessarily service if we're trying to get something out of it. I'll invite the rich person over or I'll help mow their lawn because I'll probably get a better rate back, or you know, we just think so selfishly. We don't do service for pay. We do not serve for favors. We do not serve for rewards. We do not serve for respect. We serve because somebody has a need. Now, very naturally, when you serve, there may be something that comes in return. But we do not behave that way. We do not serve for that. Because if we are serving to get a bank full of favors and a bank full of expectations or demands out of another person, that's called extortion. That's the mob. We're trying to get people under our thumb. I've done this thing for you. Remember how I did that thing for you? Remember how hard I worked on that thing for you that time. I've done it more than once. Isn't it great that I've helped you that way? And we are working to get people under our control. And I think a lot of people don't recognize that. I don't think that they're as, you know, obvious as the mob in trying to extort people that way. But we don't serve to have control over people. The reason you serve somebody is because they are controlled by a money problem, a sickness problem, they don't have enough time to get things done kind of problem. And when you serve them, you are releasing them from the bonds. Not the bonds of Satan necessarily, but they've been tied up by sickness. They've been tied up by the constraints of life. And when we serve, we are freeing them. If I then tie them up under my control, I've just made it even worse. That's not what service is. At the end of 2 Corinthians, and this is an amazing thing for Paul to say when you're done reading all of 2 Corinthians, because the Christians that he's writing to in 2 Corinthians are such a mess. 1 Corinthians seems bad. 2 Corinthians, they're so mean to him. And he says, I will most gladly spend and be spent. And I don't understand how he was able to pull that off. But he did. He was going to spend himself to death, practically. Service is about putting all of our eggs in somebody else's basket. And we need to serve. We need to serve. The decision to serve doesn't wait on others to start serving. So when David shows up and he sees the big old Goliath guy, and there's even all these incentives, hey, somebody will go out and find Goliath, no one's doing it. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Why isn't anyone?
Well, you know,
if Ralph will go, I'll follow Ralph. Why did they not do it? I really don't know. Were they afraid? Were they selfish? Were they lazy? They didn't get up and do the job? In Luke 10, verse 40, Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went up to Jesus and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me. Get her up, focusing on her own rights or her own effort or her own recognition, and she has this blame that she's throwing at her sister, thinking about herself. That's just not right. Well, that's not my responsibility. I'm not going to step up until I see other people. That is their job. I'm going to wait. They need to get up to that. Maybe I'll serve when that's going on. I'll help out, but brother so-and-so's lazy, and he needs to learn how to get this stuff done. The only other person that has any determinant on me serving is the one who is in need. So if the one who is in need is standing right in front of me, all these other people not serving, they don't affect it. Choose you this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. The irony of the word serve is in there. That wasn't the point. You choose this day that you will do the thing. You need to own it yourself. This is your work. This is your obedience to God. And you don't need other people to do it. We need to get up and get busy. Which means that we're going to be busy alone sometimes, right? And it gets right back to Martha. Don't you care that my sister's left me all alone? And we sympathize with her, right? I love complaining about Martha. It's such a great story. I complain about her because I know I feel like her. She has a very childish view of justice. And I say that because every child gets this vision of justice. And we're trying to train children to get out of that simplistic view of justice. And then we ourselves still hold on to that simplistic view of justice. And here's the reality. Her sight of injustice, she's not doing anything and I'm doing it all, is true. It's not wrong, it's true, it's an accurate sight, but it's a small, narrow sight. And if she could step back and have a bigger vision and realize, you know, there are lots of truths, not the way the world says individual, you know, there's a lot of true things, but there's also this great, massive truth that weighs more. And if dinner's late because we're listening to the Son of God talk, then the guy who can actually make food appear out of nowhere can take care of the problem with dinner being late. There are bigger truths. And she had that childish or that small view. She's also demanding these things. It's like a demand for pity. And the demand for pity is destructive and it's damaging. And it damages and destroys families, and it's going to damage and destroy churches. We choose to serve alone. And when we choose to serve alone and we get there, we're going to realize that helpers are going to show up pretty soon. And to our shame, if I say, well, I'm going to do it. No one else is doing it, and I'm going to do it. And you get there, and there's already someone already there serving before you that you didn't know about. Humbling you. Getting you to wake up to your own foolishness. Don't think, well, this is their job. It's only me, so it won't do any good. And that's building that resentment. Resentment is a massive killer. Resentment, if we let that build up, I'm the only one here. They should be doing this with me. If I let that build up, it's going to lead to anger and hatred. It's going to despise people, not just the one, but the many. It might I had to do it for myself, so I'm not going to let anyone help me. If we don't address that resentment, we're going to die, and we're going to kill a lot of people on our way down. That's just what that does. Resentment is so dangerous. When Elijah knew he was alone, and I like just the way that Paul says it, and what was God's reply to him? I have kept 7,000 men who have not bowed the knee to Baal. Elijah knew he was alone, and then God says, you're wrong. And we have to be so careful about what we know. I know, and often we're wrong. You can't expect a favorable response when you are serving people. You can't demand it. When the lady came and broke open and wasted all that money's worth of perfume on Jesus' feet, for crying out loud, look at that waste. We could have helped so many people. Grumble, grumble, what a dumb lady. She is honoring and worshiping the Lord. And they think, how bad is this? Everyone else got to enjoy the smell. I don't know how bad the smell was before, but clearly the smell afterwards was good. So it wasn't for them, and they still got to enjoy the blessing. And they complained about it. They didn't like it. Now, we shouldn't demand or expect favorable responses, right? That's like expecting a payment. But if we get an unfavorable response, it's like we're being punished for doing a good thing. Psalm 35, verses 12 and 13, David's complaining about just this crazy treatment he's getting from other people. They repay me evil for good. My soul is bereft. But when they were sick, I wore sackcloth. I afflicted myself with fasting. I prayed with my head bowed down on my chest. They're paying me back for good. But when they were upset, I was trying to help them out. We need to be careful not to expect to get love just because we're serving somebody. Or, they better respect this because this is valuable stuff. Because again, we're pointing right back at ourselves. We're demanding control. And 1 Peter 4:4 has nothing to do about service. Absolutely nothing at all. This is one of my favorite verses of the Bible. To me, it describes high school, I think. Here you are, you're trying to do something good, and they look at it. Why aren't you doing what we do? Why aren't you doing what we like? And sometimes when you are trying to serve somebody, people are going to have this frustrated surprise about you. And they won't like your help. What are you saying? What are you saying about me? Do you think I need your help? That's why I'm here. Do you think that I can't do this for myself? Well, I'm here to help you with this. Are you judging me? Do you have some sort of hidden agenda? Are you trying to get something done? That's hard. That's hard to deal with. It's unfair treatment. We got to figure out how to serve. Now, we need to also live peaceably with all men. That's something that's said in Romans chapter 12. So we need to not hammer people over the head with our service. But we're not going to always be loved for trying to help. We can't reserve service for just our friends. Jonah only wanted to preach the gospel to happy, smiling, nice people, not enemies who might do bad things, mostly because Jonah didn't want God to help those people. He wanted to save God's service for himself and his good-looking friends. So Jonah was only looking at himself. In Matthew 5, 47 and 48, and if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same. You therefore must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. You know, Hitler loved his mama. Are we going to applaud love in that guy? It's easy to love the people that love you back. It's easy to serve the people who serve you back. And we've got to do more than that. We are called to be perfect, we are called to be complete, and we need to serve the lovely and the ugly. We're not about particularization, we're not about division, we're not about making divisions. We need to not just think, well, I don't want to serve him because he's grouchy. I don't want to serve her because she's not going to be nice to me. I don't like that. They're not going to appreciate this well enough. So, Proverbs 3:27, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. Even if you have a good reason to not serve brother so-and-so and sister so-and-so, even if it's a good reason, it's a bad reason. It's just a bad reason. We need to get out of our own heads. Truly I say to you, as at least you did it to one of these my brothers, you've done it to me. We need to find sheep. We need to serve these sheep because that is how we serve Christ. We're going to have to humiliate ourselves at times. And unfortunately, when you serve, you're going to be treated like a servant. There's that line when you're dating somebody, go to a restaurant and see how they treat the waitress, right? Because who cares about waitresses? Who cares about wait staff? And you can learn about people if that's their attitude and how they're interacting with them. Well, the problem is when you're a servant, you're going to get treated that way. And Jesus looked like a servant when he tied that towel around his waist and got down on his ground and started serving people that were smaller than him. This is beneath me. If people see me stooping this low, what are they going to think? Exactly. They're going to think that you're a servant. What if they see me doing this? Well, who are we? Who are we to think that there is a lower position than us? I mean, there's us, and then underneath us is like bugs and birds and stuff. Everything's above us. There's us, and then there's, you know, the angels and the heavenlies, and then there's the Son of God and God. I mean, it's all above us. It's beneath us is just bugs and trees. There's nothing beneath us. There's no lower human than human. And so we can't just think that there's people that are lower than us. Jesus went so low in Philippians chapter 2. We're not stooping that far when we're serving one another. And there's this pride attitude. Naaman, well, I got better rivers at home to take a bath in. What would I do it in this dirty river? And pride enters in, and we don't want to do the thing. And we need to stay away from that. One of the most important stories in the whole Bible is John chapter 13. I think it's 1 through 13, or is it 1 through 11? And we're going to read that. We're going to pretend it's a psalm. This is the closing lesson, or the closing reading. I like getting in the habit of reading psalms, because then when I read something that's not a psalm, it kind of feels like one. I was thinking about doing Mark chapter 10. There's some verses there, and it's on the handout, but I'm just going to read this. This is one of the most important Bible stories. And Jesus demonstrates these qualities. It's not about our rights. Service needs to be practical for it to be worthwhile. We don't do it to get something back. We don't wait for others, and we're going to do it alone. We might get hurt in the process or not liked because we do it. We don't do it for just our friends. And we're going to be low in the process. And think about Jesus as we read through this. Think about Jesus being a servant here. John chapter 13, 1 through 11. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garment and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? Jesus answered, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." And Jesus said to him, "The one who is bathed doesn't need to wash except his feet, but is completely clean, and you are clean, but not every one of you." For he knew who was to betray him. That was why he had said, "Not all of you are clean." They didn't need a total bath. He didn't waste their time. He did what was appropriate. He did it knowing that everything was in his hands by the power of God, and he was going to go right back to God. And he lowered himself. He served 12 guys, two of whom demonstrated that they didn't like it. Peter spoke out about it, the way Peter does. Judas betrayed him, didn't repay that very well in return. Jesus got nothing back from these guys. But this is what he did. Service is dirty and ugly. That's what makes it service. I've never read the book, but I bring it up a whole bunch of times. My favorite book about elders, only based on the title, is They Smell Like Sheep. I love that idea. One of the I've preached this sermon before, and the subtitle is Do You Stank? Because the point is, if we're serving, we're dirty and we're grubby because we're serving. We're tired because we're serving. We're not getting lifted up. God lifts us up. And that's what we need to think about. We need to keep Jesus in our hearts so that we can keep our hands busy working and serving other people. There's a lot of people serving. There are so many of you who are busy and overwhelmed with the work and the service that you are doing. So this isn't about that. This is about making sure that when we're doing these things, that we're thinking about, where is my heart? What am I thinking about? Because you can go on serving and resentment start building in your heart. And that's really what we got to be afraid of. Little things like that, sneaking in, Satan giving us the opportunity to take a good thing and kind of ruin it, even as we still help other people. It's just so important to think about these things. I'm preaching to the choir. It's Sunday night. We're all servant. We need to just have these in our hearts so that we do a good job and so that we care for one another. Jesus served us. He willingly died so that we don't ever have to die. If you need the salvation of Jesus, if you need to be washed, not just your feet, but all over, we have water, you can get baptized. But if you have been washed and you need your feet cleaned, if you need to confess that there's sin, that there's something in your life that you need help with from your brothers and sisters, this is a great opportunity. We're all ready to listen and hear and pray with you. If there's anyone who needs help or prayers, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing?